Hello, welcome to the show brought to you by the YFC. And I'm Everett, and welcome to our 10th episode of the show. We should probably do some kind of dance or some silly, I don't know, some contest, right? That this is the 10th episode of what we're doing here today, and it's really, really fun that we are going to focus on. Today we're going to talk about having a disability and dealing with being a part of faith communities. And for those of you that are new to the show, because we hope that we're building some kind of momentum here, is the YAFC, or the Youth Advocates for Change, is a group that is supported by the Ray Center, which supports parent and training centers in supporting young adults with disabilities in the transition from high school to adult life, whether that be to a job, to some sort of college, or to some level of independent living, living on their own in their own house and in their own stuff. And part of that, I think the independent living piece is maybe searching for faith communities. And so I'm really, really excited to have some young adults with me tonight to discuss what it's like for them to be a part of faith communities, because I think everybody's journey in spirituality and faith is different and unique. But I'm gonna have podcast veteran Jennifer introduce herself first, and then go to a newbie, Hunter. So first, Jennifer, you want to go first?
Yeah, I am Jennifer. And for the purposes of this episode, I'll also introduce my Hebrew name is Gedalia. And I am Jewish, and I work as a recovery coach in California, in addition to my work with Raise. And so I think that's the perspective that I'm going to be bringing to this episode of being both disabled and Jewish.
Sure. Awesome. Thank you
I have
for
a
coming
lot to talk about there.
and being so open about this. And Hunter?
Yes. Hi, everybody. My name is Hunter. I am Christian. I am Presbyterian. I'm part of the Presbyterian Church USA. I have a very visible disability. My skin is bright pink. Part of what I do is I work in kind of this intersection of faith and disability. I am currently the sitting president of Presbyterians for Disability Concerns, which is a group of folks that are either in the ministry or they are folks in the ministry caring for congregations with disability needs or concerns. I went to seminary. I'm in the process for ordination, and I work for the Pennsylvania Bureau of Special Ed and the vocational rehab folks, helping to represent youth voice across the state. So thanks for having this really important conversation about how these two very interesting subgroups interact.
Well, yeah, and Hunter, I know you're new to the podcast, and we've been having some episodes around this topic of intersectionality, and we felt like faith was what was a big part of that, and it's part of people's identities, and we wanted to bring that conversation to light. And the first question or concept I wanted to bring up, and I'll have Jennifer go first, and then kind of let Hunter kind of like build off what Jennifer shares is. What value has being a part of a faith community brought to your life, Jennifer? I know in a past episode you had brought up about how you purposely seek out your faith community at times, or you have. And so do you want to talk a little bit more about that and what
I
that's meant
think
for you?
so. Something that I do want to bring up here is that, especially living in a country that is culturally Christian and being Jewish, and then living in a country that is not built for that is built for able people and being disabled, there is a parallel there, of existing in spaces that were maybe not designed for me. Or not designed for a certain aspect of me. And so just like when I'm around other disabled people and there's that understanding, there's going into a Jewish space and that understanding that I think is only made greater in that a lot of the places that I've seen have been very disability accommodating. One of the earliest stories that I can tell on Rosh Hashanah, which is one of the highest holy days in Judaism, is the story, and I won't tell the full story, but it's a story of a sheep herder who is going to have their coming of age ceremony and is supposed to read from the Bible and cannot read. And the unique way that they are able to contribute is just to play their sheep flute. And while it is a bit trite and a bit of a like feel-good story, something that I've always been very conscious of in Judaism is giving people a way to contribute that is on their terms, not on religion, not on Judaism's terms, but on the terms of the people who are seeking to incorporate themselves into the community. However they seek to do that, they are allowed to. And as someone who is disabled and has struggled in life, like, I cannot stand for an entire service that might require standing. There are other ways that I cannot engage in regular life or in religious life. And having a religion that meets me on those, meets me halfway, has been really huge and given me the strength to ask other people outside of that to meet me halfway.
Yeah, I want Hunter to answer, but I'll tell a story too. And I think, Hunter, in preparing for this episode, we talked a bit about how I kind of went on, and I'll say I'm a Christian, but I wouldn't say I'm more of a spiritual person. Like, I have a relationship with God. That's how I kind of view this. But I did have this moment where I was kind of like seeking where I fit. Almost what you talked about, Jennifer, right? Like seeking out where I might feel best. And I remember going to a Catholic church for a service, and I'm a wheelchair user, and all everybody kept doing was, I guess, kneeling and standing. And Hunter, you might laugh. Is that, I mean, that's true, right? And the people there, though, were so accommodating to me that it was okay. But I literally felt that from jump, was like, oh, this is like, this process is alienating to me. So trying to find the right community that fits someone is crucial, right? That you feel like you belong, you know, that you feel like you can be there.
Yeah.
And so, Hunter, you want to talk about, I know, I mean, you have, you're knee deep in this with a master's and trying to be ordained, but what kind of brought you to that, and what value has it brought to you to be a Presbyterian?
Oh, so much value. I mean, Jennifer, I think something you hit on is really important, and that's that you're going in seeking community. You're going in seeking connecting with other people. And it's kind of a vulnerable space, right? Because, you know, for us, there's a certain level of vulnerable existence, right? Of moving around in a world that isn't necessarily built with us in mind. And at the same time, I have been a part of the same congregation that I have been a part of since I was 5 years old. I grew up in this space. I grew up with these same people. And, you know, I look very different when I go out in public. My presence turns heads. I get comments. I get questions. I get inappropriate at times responses from the general public. But this place was one place I could go where I wasn't any of those things. I wasn't the red girl. I was just Hunter. I could just go and be myself, and I was welcomed as I was. And that is something that I got so used to in the church where I grew up in, that when I went to college and I left home for a little while, and I went to other churches, and I went, oh, they're not all like that. Oh, most of them are actually not like that. And, you know, kind of learning for myself what that relationship with God looks like. Because there's a lot of talk, about, well, where does disability come from a spiritual lens, right? And why is it there? And all of that kind of stuff. And, you know, a lot of that ends up being turned into this language of, for lack of better terms, sin, right? This idea that, well, somebody did something wrong at some point, and so now you're experiencing this as some sort of divine retribution or something. From my seminary studies, I can't tell you how much of a load of crap that is.
Sure.
And I say that because one of the books that I stumbled across, actually before I went to seminary, but I really delve into the subject in seminary, was this idea of coming to the table of a disabled God. There's some really awesome, fairly recent in the long span of religious academia literature about, you know, coming at it from a Christian lens and looking at the person of Jesus. And looking at the nature of the way that the Gospels describe his resurrected form. He still maintains his wounds from his experience. In his wholeness, in his perfection, he is still marked. That says to me that the marks of this world are a part of you. And they themselves are holy. They are special. They are built as part of you. And I know for different people in different relationship to their disability, they may or may not feel comfortable with that idea. But to me, that is comforting. You know, we think about being made in the image of God. Well, when it comes to being very visibly different, that takes on a new meaning. That means that God looks like me with red skin. That means that God looks like you, Everett, as a wheelchair user. That means that God looks like all of these things. And to me, that is so, so very comforting. Sure. And to be able to be in a space where I can be with other people who are also image bearers and that kind of thing. And so that is what it has meant to me.
Regardless of what your perspective is, a lot of it seems to be geared around that community building and that belonging space. And with that, and Hunter, I think you mentioned, and I'll go to Jennifer with this, but you mentioned how you were in the same church since you were five. And so it became like a safe place. And then when you left, you realized the challenges that are there. But Jennifer, do you want to talk about like the challenges that you faced? I mean, you already mentioned a little bit of some of them, but other challenges you face in terms of kind of being a part of your faith and what your disability has meant to that. Do you have a similar experience of what Hunter kind of mentioned where disability is seen as this thing that you have to get rid of or that people are trying to tell you that you must have done something wrong to be like this when your perception might be, I am who I am, you know?
And I have not experienced a lot of that in Judaism itself. Interestingly enough, and I think part of that is specifically some of the tenets of Judaism, and also that, like, growing up, I learned Talmud from a rabbi who had a vocal disability. I don't know the details of it, but it was evident to us. And also, I think that so much of Judaism is built upon a notable history of disability in high places in the religion. That said, I do want to take a moment here to sort of back out for a minute and say that, like, obviously I'm talking from a Jewish perspective, Hunter is talking from a Presbyterian's perspective, and I do want to encourage, and we're only two people, we cannot invite every religion in the world into this Zoom call.
I wish we could.
and in the span of religions of the world, those are two relatively narrow, overlapping religions. But I do want to invite people of other religions who are disabled or to leave their comments and talk about how their religion interacts with this and their stories. I know this video is going to go up on YouTube, and maybe we can add a little comment section on the Raised site as well. I don't want this to just be two religions and how they interact with disability. I want this to be a larger conversation, so I want to take a moment here to make that happen.
But to go back
to your question, I think I have luckily avoided a lot of that, the more overt aspects, but there have been lesser aspects, right? And I think the biggest version of that has been in 2020. The amount of synagogues and shuls and congregations that I have seen suddenly broadcast everything on Zoom. And for a moment realized how involved I, like, with the inability to get to a local synagogue removed, suddenly realizing what involvement can look like for someone who might be more able-bodied. That was an eye-opener for me as someone who, like, cannot get to a synagogue cannot physically get to a synagogue on a weekly basis. It has been that is something that I'm only more recently become aware of, even as I've held my religion as a close part of me my entire life. Excuse me.
Sure. What about for you, Hunter? Like, I mean, you mentioned some of the challenges that you faced, but I know for me, some of it has been like, people will see me out in my chair and want to pray for me, which I'm all about. I think we talked about this, right? Like, pray for me all you want. I'll even pray with you. But where I get sensitive or it feel some type of way is when they're like, and you're gonna feel better now, and then they get done praying and it's like, how do you feel? And it's like, I was okay before we got here. Like, I was, you know what I mean? And
they're expecting a miracle moment.
Yes. Or it's that they want to feel like they're having an impact on this person who is having a horrible situation they wouldn't want to live with. And so it has turned me off to certain communities. I've had to find those that validate who I am as being okay. Because if I get around people that are, I don't know, trying to fix me, I'm out. Like, I'm out. Like, I'll just...
Legit, though. Right? So much of... So many... And I'm... Look... I'm saying this as part of the church, guys. We got this is a serious issue. We got to deal with this. Like,
yes,
you don't fix disability is not a thing you fix, and it's certainly not a thing that we humans can fix. First off,
right.
But like,
sure.
But also, you know, I think you're spot on. Is you know, I'm all about, you know, let's have that communal relationship with God. Let's spend time together as a community in prayer. But the second you turn around and look at me and go, okay, are you going to stand up now? Or, right. Okay, is your skin look different? No.
Yeah, yes.
You know, I can't tell you the number of people who have, like, you know, do you believe that Jesus can heal you? Kind of stuff. And I'm like, look, man, I'm a Christian, and even I don't go that far. And not because I think he can't or wouldn't, but because I think, you know, for me, my condition is genetic. So it is literally in my DNA to be this way. Right. I think that is intentional on God's part. I don't think that's a bug. I think it's a feature.
Well, and for me, like, having CP is a birth defect, and I can trace back in my history or my mother's history of pregnancy and maybe understand biologically, or, you know, from a science perspective, why I am the way that I am. And so I kind of look at it like, that was supposed to happen that way, and I'm okay with that. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like,
yes.
While CP is deemed a defect, it is something that has enhanced my life completely. Now, Could I have a different perspective if I was a person who acquired my disability, you know, after birth, and I'm 22 years old, and now I have, and now I'm a paraplegic, and there's all of that that goes on with that? Could that be seen differently? Absolutely. But even to those folks, I've tried to say, everything happens for a reason, and it's all connected, you know, back to, you know, where you're supposed to be. And so, yeah, the challenges are, I think, again, it's attitudinal things that get in the way. But I'll go back to what both of you have said, and maybe this is like a theme for the overarching theme of this episode, is that if you find the right community as a family, as a young adult, as a person, it can be really beneficial. It can. And being a part of it, it can be a part of the fabric of who you are and what you become. Right. Mm-hmm. Cause I wanted to ask you then too, like, what have you done, Hunter? And I'll go to you because you kind of have highlighted these, is like, how have you gone out of your way in these spaces to make people more comfortable, or don't you do that? Are you the kind of person that like is unapologetically Hunter no matter what?
I have to be. I don't have a choice in the matter.
Do you know what I mean though?
Yes. And you know, it's interesting because so I do a lot of I'm going to call it substitute preaching. I fill in many a Sunday. When I go in though, unless the scripture passage calls for it in some way, I typically don't make reference to my skin or my disability. It's certainly something people see. It's certainly something people interact with. Excuse me. And it's something that is, you know, what do I call it? The red elephant in the room. It's definitely that. Right. And at the same time, you know, I've actually done a lot of work with disability inclusion. We have a Disability Inclusion Sunday that's in September, where we, you know, dedicate time to worship and give thanks for, you know, our brothers and sisters and siblings of all abilities, of all neurodivergencies, of all shapes and sizes, because... you know, so much of, I think, particularly, and, you know, Jennifer, you can speak to the difference, I think, because there is, it sounds like there is some interesting cultural difference between kind of the Christian expectations around disability, that it's this bad thing, that it either hints at something bad about you or your family, or even that, you know, that you must be so... you must be so bad off, you know, that you need extra God. Right.
That's a funny way of putting it. Like, I'm all about being spiritual and having faith, but like, I don't think I need extra. Like, I feel like I'm, I don't, but that's what people, that's the perception of what I have seen. Right. Yeah. I mean, that is it. You must need more. And heaven forbid your wife or your family. Like, how do they even live?
Wait,
like,
you have a wife? You can have a family? Really? Like, that blows their minds.
Anyway. Yeah, Jennifer, can you speak to the difference in maybe some of
I think spiritual. And again, this is just like religion is not all one thing. Judaism is not all one thing. There are, you know, many different groups within Judaism, even within the same group, like one temple to another, one synagogue to another, are going to be different. But in the groups that I have found myself part of, there has been a heavy emphasis on inclusion and on this. When we're talking about, like, how do you observe this holiday? There's a very famous commandment by Thomas Mitchell, which is that you should live by these rules, but you shouldn't die by them. that if something is going to ever put your health in any number of danger, then you just ignore it. Like, and as someone, and just have that just be an overarching premise that, like, if I can't safely do this, then I don't do this. There is such a lack of expectation that I would make myself do anything that I don't think I can. And that goes a long way in allowing me to engage with Judaism, because there's no, if you're not doing the thing everyone else is doing, there's an understanding that there's a reason for that, and that the rest of the congregation doesn't need to know what that reason is, has been.
And that does feel completely opposite to how I have experienced, I'll say, negativity within my faith, mm-hmm. has been that you're not meeting the expectations, yeah. right?
Or can,
that
I, you, can I throw in a question?
Yeah, sure. Yeah, I mean, go ahead, yeah.
I'm just curious, you know, I'm familiar a little bit with kind of the idea of that practice of, like, you know, doing what is safe for you. Mm-hmm. And when thinking about, you know, fasting for Yom Kippur and things like that, that makes sense. Mm-hmm. I wonder, are there other applications of that? Like other instances where a practice might, you know, might require more than one might be able to do?
Absolutely. I think the easy ones are all food-based, right? If you're fasting, you don't have to fast. There are endless amounts of discourse about clever ways to eat and make sure that you are eating enough while, like, you're technically fasting, but because any one bite is less than an olive, which is like a measurement amount. But you're still making sure you get as much nutrition as possible. But there's also, like, lesser amounts, like on Passover when you can't eat bread, clever ways to make sure that you are still getting all your nutrition, or just still eat bread. And I think down the line, on every level of tradition, when you are praying, the idea that there's an idea in prayer called shokling, which is to go like this and to move your entire body as you pray. And that's a thing that you can do that is a perfectly valid way to pray. Or you can just sit down. And I think across every observation, every commandment, every mitzvah, there is the idea that, like, if you're doing it different, there's probably a reason, and that reason is as valid even if you don't know what it is. And other people don't get to say, like, other people can ask you, but it's not a judgmental ask. It's a, like, hey, that's an interesting, like, way to observe, what's your reasoning there, because I might want to do it too. So it's even when they're asking, there's no judgment. It's curiosity and a positiveness about that. And often it'll just be like,
beautiful and respectful,
yeah,
way to do that.
Yeah. I think it comes down, and again, this, it comes down to this idea that questioning it is not bad. And because questioning is not bad, differences are not bad. Because there is, and those two ideas going hand in hand. Difference is not bad, questions are not bad. And so, yeah,
like, questioning things is okay, so that means difference is okay, because,
yeah, and I think the, honestly, difference is okay might be the core of that. But those two definitely go hand in hand, sure, in allowing a very positive environment for disability.
Yeah, and I guess that kind of lends me to the last question for tonight, and I hate to cut this off, but I don't want to give you guys 90 minutes when I give everybody else 45 to a half hour, right? But the question is, like, what would you tell parents who are maybe nervous or considering connecting their child to a faith community? I know for me, my mom just took me to church and let me kind of decide for myself. And I think that was her way of being like, hey, like, this is your journey, right? Not mm-hmm. mine. So you decide what you want to do and then make your own choices, right? But then it also allowed me to, like, find my own voice within that space. more than I realized. But preparing for this episode, I thought, you know, that was on purpose, wasn't it? And she said, yes, you know, like that was on purpose. So what kind of advice would you give to parents who are kind of looking at this and might be skeptical, afraid, or maybe they really want to do it? And why should they really want to do it? I don't know who wants to take that one first. I should have probably pointed that out, but I'm a bad host. So what can you do? Oh, Jennifer, you want to go first?
Go ahead, Jennifer.
Yeah.
Hunter just did a nose go.
I think when it comes to both in religion and in disability, I think as a parent, something you have to acknowledge about your child is where they are finding that meaning. So, like, when you are putting effort into something, if it has meaning to the child, to the young adult, then it is going to be worth it. And if it doesn't have meaning, then a lot of times it's not going to be worth it. And so the question is not like, should I involve them in religion? It's what parts of this, if I involve them, it will have meaning to them. It's not, you know, can this disabled person figure out a way to do this? It's like, is there a reason that this person wants to do this? And that makes, and is that worth?
That is a very perceptive answer. That is great for the 10th episode of this. That literally applies to every mm-hmm. aspect of what we've talked about, right? Is like, if there is value in this for someone, then maybe you should invest in it. And if there's yeah. no value in it, if they don't
and
see
that value,
value
is...
in it, then don't force that.
And that value is yeah. personal. The things that I see as value are not necessarily things that other people will see as value. That is
sure.
heavily personal. But that sure. is, you know.
And I would add to that too, you know, I think there's a certain level of coming to terms with the life that is different. The for parents, oftentimes it's a certain element of grieving the life that you thought your child would have. And in other instances, it's celebrating the life that your child has. And another way, you know, it's and for that child, it's understanding themselves and their own body and their own mind and how it works in this world. What is their place in it?
Yeah.
And in that sense, I think, you know, that's the great joy of faith communities is that here is a place where you can begin to wrestle with those questions and hopefully do so in a place and an environment where those questions are welcome, where that growing room of mm-hmm. adapting to what you need is met with people who are willing to grow alongside you. And,
sure.
you know, oftentimes that might mean doing a little bit of educating up front. You might have to educate some of the folks in that new community so that they can know how to adapt to your child or to you. It might mean, you know, being able to advocate for your own needs if you need or want, you know, larger print bulletins or if you need a device to help you hear or something, anything. You know, oftentimes communities are working hard. There's actually lots of conversations happening within faith communities about how do we make our places and our forms of worship, our spaces, more accessible and more inclusive for more people. And part of the challenge in that conversation is they can't prepare for something they don't know about.
Right.
Once they know, then they can prepare and work with you. And so it can feel very scary taking those first couple steps. And there is such a big, diverse community of folks with all sorts of abilities inside those doors, just hanging out, waiting for you.
Yeah, well, and I think that it's, and I think that this is, I mean, what you both said is a great way to wrap this up, but I think that when I've worked at other places that have done holistic transition plans, person-centered plans that are like about what somebody hopes and dreams are, what they like, what they don't like, Where do they see themselves in the future? In five years, 10 years, 6 months? Like all of those kind of conversations, to me, this faith-based conversation is a part of that, because there is a community there. And what you said is that it's literally a spot for you to kind of be and grow with someone who wants you to be there to do that. And so the natural community is such that that's helped, and you can learn things about yourself and about what you need in a space that's going to support you through that. But that goes back to the whole beginning of this, is finding the right community, right? Finding that right community that you fit with. And if you don't fit there, don't. And I really like Jennifer's way of saying, like, take some pressure off. You know what I mean? Like, take some pressure off and just kind of live and understand that this is a journey that you're going on, and things will change and evolve the way that they do. And so thank you both for your time. Thank you both for your energy and your honesty and your vulnerability about this too. I think this topic is super important, and I'm so glad that the YIFC chose to do this episode, because I think it's critical to this conversation more than people realize. So thank you both. You'll hear episode 11 in next month, which is February, and it'll be about dating and relationships. So we're going to go from religion or faith communities to dating and relationships. I didn't really think about that when we were planning these out, but it's a cool dichotomy to go from religion to Valentine's Day and talking about dating and relationships. But I know that that also is a hot button topic for not only for youth, but also for their families too. And so we'll talk about that. And
tons of really easy topics to fill up with
Yeah, we well, you know,
super easy answers there, you know, one and done.
I'm loving these intersectionality conversations, because they are bringing up really deep perspectives from young people or young adults who really do think about this. And I think that shows that people need to be having more just open conversations like this about them. So thank you both. Everybody have a good one, and we'll see you next month for episode 11. Yeah.